Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now then, let's go to the La Rochelle Diaries. Ronan O'Gara, hello.
Hey Joe, how are you doing?
How are you doing?
Yeah, a bit better this week. Got a first win in Europe, so that was important. And we lost a bad game at home to Glasgow, but we were kind of keen to make amends going to Glasgow and change the team a little bit and got the required result, which was great.
I watched the highlights and I must say, well, I knew the result, but I'm sure you were thinking at the time when Glasgow went over for a first try, you're away from home, oh, here we go again. But it seems like the team battled back brilliantly. There were no scores in the second half, as I remember it. And so it's kind of that kind of trench warfare a little bit. But then even celebrations at full time for a team not going to make the knockout stages, just the win itself clearly meant something to the group.
Yeah, it did. And I was probably selfish, I suppose, in that regard, kind of, because that's what I was reared on. It gave a competition that has given me such great memories and great souvenirs. But obviously, it's a team game, management game, it's a player's game nowadays. But where I came from, just 0-3, just didn't sleep well for those previous few weeks, because sail away, silly red card, very, very silly, very frustrating. It wasn't beyond the realms of possibility that you could get a result, even 1 point over there. And then Glasgow at home, again, we should never have lost. We were kind of in control of it, but we lacked killer instinct. And it was pleasing. Yes, as you say, we conceded an early score from a driving maul, from a situation where you have a young, really promising back row player that's playing away, but he doesn't really understand the consequences of not rolling away and the tackle. For him, it's probably giving away a penalty, but I think the message as a coaching staff we're trying to deliver is the fact that where was the next line out from that penalty on a desperate night for rugby? It was 5 metres from our line. Yeah. While there's absolutely no danger, or, you know what I mean, no real threat, just give them the ball. But if you force a great referee like Wayne Barnes's hand, you know what I mean, if that's the picture you're painting, he's going to ping you every time, and rightly so. So there is big learnings, but it's small margins. But, you know, you have to be ambitious in terms of the Champions Cup. It's where we want to be. And, you know, 0-3, you're becoming a little bit of a laughing stock. But thankfully, away from home, I think that puts a little bit of value back in your club.
And you mentioned they're not sleeping, and you used the phrase a laughing stock. Is that how it was starting to feel a little bit for you, especially given your pedigree in the competition? A touch embarrassing?
Yeah, most definitely, Joe. I think, you know, it's all well and good being involved, but I think that it wouldn't be the mindset of the club or particularly of the coaching group. And I think we had Sale, we had Glasgow, we have Exeter in our group, and Exeter have obviously been the class act, but we want to scrap it out for second place, that's for sure.
You also said there about the team at times not quite having the killer instinct. So you've played on teams which were growing into themselves and maybe acquiring that killer instinct, or you've coached teams who have it. How do you get that? How do you give a team that?
No, that is, I think, it is an interesting discussion, and the fact I think you learn that and I think you develop that, and the more you put yourself in that situation, the better chance you have of actually understanding what going away from home and getting performance looks like. Actually, Paul O'Connell graciously rang me and said, well done, a lot of teams go to Glasgow and don't get a result. And he was right in what he said. He said that, you know, I mean, the team we played on, we went away and we won ugly loads of times. And that's a skill in itself. But for us, you know, I think we're not used to winning European games. It's a club that's not used to playing in the Champions Cup. But, you know, I mean, the impact I want to have on the club is that, you know, I mean, we want to be getting to the knockout stages. That has to be the goal. Mm.
Meanwhile, seventh in the table, 5 wins, 5 losses. I see you're playing on the 22nd and then you've a week off for Christmas and you're playing again on the 29th. So what's the O'Gara plan for Christmas then?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be in France, unfortunately, just to train Stevens. Fairness to John O'Gibbs, who he put training. the afternoon on the 26th for people that live in different areas of France, so they can travel in the morning and come in and train on Stephen's afternoon around 3 o'clock. But for me, just all the airline companies, there's no direct flights anymore. It's only in the summer schedule that you can get Dublin, La Rochelle. So the Cork, Paris journey through the night and fly Dublin, Paris, and get a train from Paris to La Rochelle. It's just, it's not feasible, unfortunately. So it's going to be Christmas in France. So I'll miss the brilliant, we got a little taste of it in Glasgow. There was great Christmas parties going on the Friday when we arrived, and It was quite tempting to,
you could say anything here now.
Yeah.
Guess the finish to that sentence.
To have a few creamy pints the night before the game, but thankfully everyone remained focused and we played well on Saturday, and that's what makes getting involved in rugby very special.
Do you get homesick?
Especially at Christmas time, yeah, you would, because it's, I think Ireland do Christmas brilliantly. It's a great country for around Christmas time, and you would miss that, yeah. You miss, I suppose, meeting friends around Christmas Eve and the 23rd, but it's good that you do something you love all year round, and that's the way it is at the minute.
Well, that's true. So when you sit down for Christmas dinner on the 25th, hopefully having won on the 22nd, how will you reflect on this first term in charge at La Rochelle?
Yeah, it's challenging, but I knew that. But I think we've grown in certain areas. We haven't grown in other areas. I was just discussing today, the language barrier is tough. I think rugby in one language is difficult when you're trying to get your detail across, but in double language, English and French, it's more difficult. That's an excuse though, but it's fascinating. As you know, Joe, I love it. I'm a competitor. I enjoy the intricacies of working within a group, the challenges that present, the different mood swings among people, the different, I suppose, changes in form in your team. You look at Leinster and how good they are, and you'd love to get to that level, but you have to be realistic too, I think. The goal is by June, we're far better than we are now, and I think that will happen.
Mm. When you talk about the language there, and I appreciate you're saying, I'm not making an excuse, but by the same token, it's also a reality. On the pitch or in the dressing room or at certain key moments, are you at the point where you still need a bit of a translator to get through to certain players? Is it that tricky for you still?
No, it's not. But it's. I suppose the example I would give is that, you know, I mean, you reel off a good phrase or a couple of sentences in French, but one word misplaced can give a different context to it.
Okay.
So you might think in English you're going through it, and then you're getting it ready what you want to say, and then you're going on autopilot and you're able to reel it out in rugby language. But then if the traduction isn't or the translation isn't absolutely direct, then it can have a different interpretation, which sometimes gives you the blank faces back, but that doesn't really happen. You can, if you value your point very much, you do it in French and then you repeat it in English. So there's no gray areas.
Okay.
But you know, when you're trying to explain that to kind of a pendulum effect in a back three cover on a pitch, and what the blindside wing and the ailier ouvert or the arrière is a fullback and ailier is winger, you can get a little bit tongue tied. But
okay.
It's okay. It's grand. Yeah. You get used to it and you get on with it, and it's not going to, hopefully with the message you're given, it's not going to cost you a try because of you getting your words wrong. It'll be from lack of detail in your preparation.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. A few things to pick your brain on then before we let you go. So we have a big show on Thursday. Well, it's right across the day here. We're doing 15 straight hours of broadcasting, no less, and we're looking back on the decade. So Brian O'Driscoll's doing one of those hours, and he was asked to pick his player of the decade. This is a cheap and cheerful question, so you'll excuse me for this. Who's your player of the decade?
2010 to 2020, is it? Or 2009 to 2019?
Well, I mean, both.
Okay.
You can't say yourself for that Sterling World Cup in 11.
No. Just, you know who I think has been standout for me? Kian Healy.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that.
I just admire his temperament. I admire his drive. I think he's a seriously impressive player. Really good guy. And I think he is. We're talking in a national context, is it?
Well, actually, I'd meant worldwide, but maybe give me your national okay. one first. But that's yeah, your Irish one, yeah. Kian Healy.
Yeah.
Maybe we underrate him a little bit, do we?
I don't think he's ever underrated. No, I think, geez, he consistently does a great shift for Ireland every time I see him play.
Yeah.
I think what I like about him is his capacity to stay at the top for so long.
Mm. And he almost didn't with the injury. I mean, he was really in the
Well, exactly. Back, yeah. But then he came back a better player, and then he came back a better player again.
Mm.
But he's been gone a long time.
That's true.
So I think front row, you know, it's a dog of a position.
Yeah.
To play at him.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's a good answer. What about internationally?
Internationally, in the same vein, I think Alwyn Jones.
Right.
Just, you know, I suppose I'm looking for someone who has done 10 years and consistently performing. He's someone that springs to mind.
Mm.
And I suppose over that period of time too, you know, someone like Beauden Barr, I think, has been extremely consistent as well and has been world class and is a joy to watch.
Mm.
Two very different players, obviously, but on this side of the sea would be Alwyn Jones, and on the southern hemisphere would be Beauden Barrett.
Okay. A complete change of tack now. So John Cooney's lighting it up. I'm sure you've seen him to some extent already.
Yeah,
over
I
the
have.
Last number
yeah,
of weeks.
I
yeah,
have.
Yeah.
I've seen him play every week. Yeah,
okay.
He's been very impressive.
So you have a good perspective on this, the Le Petit Général culture over in France. Is that still very much a thing? Is John Cooney in that mold, and is that still very much what you see at a lot of French clubs?
Yeah, he's, yeah, okay. yeah. While in Ireland, England, Wales, Scotland, the dominant, I suppose, partner of the halfback partnership is the 10, while in France, ever since they're very, very young, the dominant role is the 9. And all the 9s become goal kickers, and nearly every 9 in France goal kicks, and it's part of their requirements for CV for gaining game time.
Yeah.
He is. But I was reading an article. He's a very accomplished soccer player.
Yeah.
John Cooney. So that obviously helps when it comes to kicking a ball or striking a ball. He is very, he has, I think, improved his technique, and he looks, he doesn't look like missing at the minute,
no.
You know, but I think that's what he's doing for Ulster. But once you take him out of that context, now he's going into an international stage where you're competing with the likes of Halfpenny, Sexton, Farrell, and Laidlaw, all really sharp shooters. So what we can say is, so far, so good. And will a 9 get an opportunity to kick on the Irish team? If Johnny Sexton is playing, no. If Joey Carberry is playing, potentially. If Ross Byrne is playing, probably not.
Mm. Okay, well, it's good because you've taken this in the direction I wanted to kind of tease your brain on. So it seemed like Peter Stringer was a perfect foil for you. You know, you were clearly a very dominant 10, a dominant figure in the team. It's clear now Johnny Sexton is the dominant figure in the team, wants to take the kicks, wants to dictate so much of the play. Is there almost like a kind of something off in the alchemy or the chemistry if a John Cooney all action comes in, likes taking the kicks, you know, as soon as Johnny might miss a few, he might be putting his hand up to take a few kicks. He might want to be involved in every little aspect of the play. That kind of French mold of a 9. Could that be not a great foil for someone like Sexton? Might Cooney find that domineering or vice versa? Or do you think that could work brilliantly?
Oh, there's a lot of ifs and buts there, Joe, I think.
It depends on personality as much as anything, I know.
Well, I think it would be pretty pretty plain sailing at this stage that if Johnny Sexton is in the team, he'd be kicking.
Yeah.
He won't even come up for debate.
And could that affect Cooney, do you think? Like, do you look at Cooney and think, in the same way if we took kicking off you, it was just so integral to your sense of yourself
yes,
on the pitch.
Yeah,
you know,
we'd
be like, you would have felt 3 inches shorter without kicking as part of your army.
Yes.
Cooney might step in a field for Ireland.
No, a lot
you're
more
off the
than
kicks.
That.
Okay.
A lot
6 inches
that.
Shorter, half your size. Yeah. But say Cooney mightn't feel himself without all that responsibility, and you could relate to that. So you wonder then how that could work in an Irish jersey for him.
Yeah, but he's got to appreciate too. He's playing for Ireland. It's a complete different step up. It's a complete different level. You know, he's going from playing from having a whirlwind of a campaign with Ulster in the pool stages also.
Sure.
Don't underestimate the step up from quarterfinal to a semi-final to a final. So in that regard, so far so good. He's doing brilliantly in all areas of the game. But I don't think it would probably, for him, he needs to probably walk first in the fact that get into the Irish team and then if he feels comfortable then he can probably potentially start claiming the goal kicks. But like what happens with a lot of I suppose teams in terms of management, what they do is they probably have three kickers on the pitch. England always in the years of Dave Aldred and Clive Woodward always had three kickers, so there was always three backs made kick, you know, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays and Fridays before test games. So puts a big emphasis and it's important. But, you know, I think I would say if, you know, if he was a 50 test experienced player playing for Ireland and he was coming in as a 9 and Johnny was there and Johnny was obviously kicking, then it may affect John Cooney, but I don't see in this situation how it would for him. He has to be focused and trying to get into the team.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's a fair point. I know I'm getting a bit down the line. I just think it's interesting because we haven't usually produced those 9s. Do you think we'll ever get to a point in this country where 9s might take more responsibility out of the French, or is the number 10 just too entrenched?
No, it's a great question. I suppose it actually depends what happens in schools, really. That's when they're kind of shaped. You know, if you turn it on its head, in my schoolboy team, it was the 9 that was kicking. I didn't kick till I went to university, till I started playing with UCC. So,
wow.
Obviously, they're different athletes nowadays and far, far stronger and better prepared and far more mature. But I think it was interesting in that regard. I think it all depends on the outlook of the coach, really. Yeah, I think there is definitely, when you see some of the way the 9s in France play, they play the game brilliantly and I think they offer an awful lot more to a team as opposed to just being a distributor.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And this might be a technical question and hard to explain on the radio, but what does a dominant 9 offer? Maybe what, like, what's the real benefit of having a real dominant 9 like that who offers more in the French guys?
Uncertainty in terms of how is the defence going to probably prepare to defend against us this weekend.
Okay.
So if you have a 9 who is, you know what I mean, unpredictable, and there are so many in the French game from all around the world. You've Rory Cocker playing with Cass, you've Carbarlo playing with La Rochelle, you've Ballets playing with La Rochelle, two completely different players within one team. You obviously have two in Toulouse at the current French 9 and Player of the Year, and then you have Bezzi as his backup. You have Morgan Parra, and you've Laidlaw and Clermont. In Bordeaux, you have three really good 9s as well. So, you know, it's just amazing. Their capacity to produce 9s is like no other country. And, you know, you look at even Racing with Machinot and TD Ibrahim, and they're probably household names in Ireland because of the times, I suppose, Munster have played them. And Racing have had good results in Europe, so they're well known to the public. But very different players, yet very comfortable kicking. Machinot obviously wouldn't be a line kicker, but Teddy Ibrahim would step up and take line kicks if you gave him half a chance, as well as the goal kicks.
Yeah. And a last one in all this, would you have liked to play alongside a 9 like that, or did you prefer the Peter Stringer brilliant distributor quick pass and let me do my stuff?
that's the way it was, Joe. You know, I think, to be fair, when you, like, the other side of it, I played a good few years with Tomás O'Leary, and he was in that mold. You know what I mean? He was basically a hurler who was playing rugby. So he just didn't know what he was doing, but that was great. But he was deadly on his instincts, and he just played. But that's...
Yeah, and you like that as well.
That's the beauty of the sport. Yeah, of course, because I suppose... When playing with strings, I knew I was getting the ball all the time. Sometimes you were there, you'd be kind of half up and have a go sometimes. With Tomás, it was like, Jesus, will you ever give me the ball, Tomás? He was a hog ball.
Well, that's what I'm that's what I'm getting at, that you'd be there kicking your feet. You'd be saying, here, I'm the star, give me the ball.
No, but sure, here, there's five fellas outside me, Joe. They need to be satisfied as well. That's otherwise... True. You know,
everyone's
it's
sulking.
Like that was the myth all the time. It was a 10-man game in Munster, but it wasn't. And that's, I take you back to 2000 in Toulouse.
Yeah.
You're too young to remember that try we scored from our own 22.
Seen it on grainy YouTube.
Yeah, okay. We leave it on that. So
we will. No, it's all very interesting. Look, we have to see how Cooney gets on, but it could be that's an interesting dynamic potentially. And Conor Murray
has
a thing or two to say.
He's knocking on the door. Sometimes the door doesn't knock the first time you hit it, and that's an important message. But he has to persevere. But knowing the competitor and Conor Murray, he's going to have a say in this. There's about it. Yeah. He doesn't survive and thrive and be one of Ireland's most. You know what I mean? He could have easily, for me, been the answer to the Keane Healy solution I gave, because I think. You know what I mean? Because he's been there for so long, he's measured differently. Not in comparison to Keane Healy, but to other nines. People are dying for change. Yeah. But I can guarantee you, if whoever comes in and doesn't perform, they'll be crying out for Conor within three games. Once you change Conor, you have to be prepared to give the newer guys a little bit of time to breathe. But I'm not too sure it's the right time.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And there's no doubt in the media, the shiny new thing that is Cooney is fun to talk about and speculate about. And you can take Conor Murray for granted. One last quick question before clock gets away from us. So Munster away to Saracens. Made a strange decision not to kick for the posts. I mean, I'm not having to go with JJ Hanrahan here, but you suspect you'd have been over and grabbed that ball at 15-6 and a couple of minutes to go and you get the ball back, get the bonus point. Your team made an art of having the nous to get a bonus point that would prove very valuable at the end. CJ Stander afterwards said it was a mistake. It was quite a bad mistake, really.
Yeah, but I suppose for people, and you hate to sound like you're on your high horse or experience, but that's what pressure does. Sometimes pressure only comes really once or twice a season, and that was a perfect example of it, is when you kind of... you know what I mean? As they say, you go into the red and you don't think clearly. It's a perfect example of it,
right.
Of when you needed composure. Sometimes you need, you know what I mean? There's this fire in the belly and ice in the mind, all these expressions, whatever you want to use. But this was a case of get within bonus point and then you have a chance of winning a game if you get a kickoff and you get a breach. But
yeah.
You know, it's just, it's hard watching because you feel for them and then up the road you see what goes on in the Aviva and every turnover Leinster get, they go the length of the pitch nearly and score.
Yeah.
And they just, when it rains, it pours.
Going to Saracens was always going to be very difficult for Munster. How will they go in La Défense against Racing?
I think they'll win. You know, and... You probably think I'm crazy saying that, having looked at what Racing did to Munster in Munster. They should have been 20 points clear, but they couldn't kill the game. And that speaks volumes for Munster's tenacity and capacity to hang in there and eke away into a game they had no right to kind of even draw. But I think this is Munster season. This is what it all comes down to. And I think... They'll find a way to win over there.
Okay. Well, that'll be some occasion. Listen, I've kept you a minute or two too long, but we'll leave you alone over the Christmas. Have a good one. Enjoy it.
Cheers, Joe. Great. Happy Christmas to you,
you
and
too.
Your listeners. See you. Bye-bye.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.